Hi, welcome to the Jim Ruff Show. Our studio, as some of you might know, is broken, so we have a makeshift studio here, and it seems to be working. My guest today is Richard K. Moore, who's a social philosopher and writer from England. He's lived there for about 10 years in England. And Richard and I met on the web, and Richard has come here from Ireland, actually, to be in California and then drive up and learn about, he's on a quest for greater democracy and he's looking for ideas for global transformation. And so we're pleased to be able to welcome him to the show and to get a chance to talk to him. Welcome.
Hi, Jim. Thanks a lot for the opportunity.
Good. So maybe you could just tell us a little bit about how you have you've flown here from Ireland and you met with your grandchild and then into California, right?
Yeah, I moved to Ireland about 10 years ago from California. So my friends and family are still in California and some of them have moved to Hawaii. So I come back about every year to see people. And this time it just so happens that I heard about a lot of interesting things going on politically, including what you're doing. So I thought it'd be a good opportunity to come up and find out what's going on.
Yeah, and what are you finding?
Well, I'm finding that there's a lot of things that are converging. It's like my own path of investigation began about when I went to Ireland 10 years ago. And I was looking at the question of how does our political system, our world system really work? Because the way it seemed to me is that things never worked out the way government leaders said they were going to work out. You know, they would promise something and something else would always happen. And so I started off kind of from the naive assumption that they weren't competent. And I was looking for why they weren't competent. But after a lot of investigation, I came more to, let's say, a less naive realization that has nothing to do with competence. What they're doing, they're very competent in what they're doing. It's just that what they're doing has nothing to do with what they tell us they're doing. So I guess the first 4 years of my work or investigation writing was an analytical one, finding out how the system works. And I finally came to the conclusion that it works so bad that it needs to be totally changed. Mm-hmm. So then, for the next 4 years, I've been looking into what can we do to change it.
Mm-hmm. So what is the system as you see it?
Well, the system is basically a bunch of rich people that run the world. You know, something in the United States, it's something like 1% of the people control 95% of all the wealth. And that concentration is getting more concentrated all the time. And if you look back in history, it's pretty much always been that way. Mm-hmm. Although maybe the percentages haven't been the same.
Okay. So the system is broken because of this incredible inequity and this power inequity, really, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
You've found that this is an ongoing pattern that just seems to permeate our society, period.
Yeah, it's pretty much how civilization has always been. Mm-hmm. You know, with the percentages being a little different, things being a little better sometimes than others. Uh-huh. But basically, societies have always been run by elites, for the interest of elites. Mm-hmm. And changing that is a very radical thing. It's more radical than just going back 200 years, going back 100. It's really like going back 10,000 years, mm-hmm. Going back to before there were elites and hierarchies.
You're thinking that to make a change in the future is to go back?
Well, I would picture it as like a spiral. I mean, in the work you're doing, you talk about a triangle system is a hierarchical system. And then you use the square as a metaphor for a constitutional system, which is based on following rules and laws and living within those rules. And then a circle system is one which is based on, I guess you could call it direct democracy, based on people working together solving their problems dynamically rather than by having a preset set of rules. And indigenous societies worked by a circle principle, using your terminology. And ever since then, we've been in more triangle square systems for the last 10,000 years. So the idea is to get back to the circle, but it's a spiral. It's like we're in a new place. We have technology, we have, you know, it's a different world, we have large population. But to get back to that circle again, I guess is how I would describe it.
So we got a broken system, and we need to make this transition to this new way of talking and being and hanging out together, and or this old way, but in a new form. And it seems like you have this, you've recognized some possibilities about how to do that, or you've recognized some potentialities anyway. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about what you're seeing in that regard.
Well, I had, in terms of my analysis of the system, I had gotten to the point where I was looking at indigenous societies for models of political systems that could be democratic. But I didn't know how that would look in today's world. And then I found out about dynamic facilitation, which is the thing you invented. And I experienced it some in some group processes I was in. And then I talked a lot to Rosa, who was quite a proponent of it, down in Sebastopol. And I could see that as a workable model that could somehow be used as a seed of creating a new way of governance. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know how that seed could actually be introduced and propagated, how it would actually happen. It seemed like it had the right characteristics, the right properties. And so what I've really been doing on this trip is talking to you and other people who are involved in these things and try to learn more about how it really works and try to figure out how one might consciously try to promote it and get it started happening as a thing in society. Because I think if what we want to do is replace the current system by another system, then we don't want to go through a period of chaos. So what we have to do is build that new system within the old system. So like the old system can either be shed like the skin of a snake, mm-hmm. and the new system is there ready.
Yes. Yeah.
So you don't go through that thing of having a revolution and then having chaos, you know.
Right.
But instead build the new system we need. Now there are a lot of people who are doing that kind of thing in terms of, like, there are people that are building their own currencies, forming co-ops, going back to the land and having communes. And so from an economic point of view and small-scale social structure point of view, there are people trying to do this. But what I'm trying to think of is how could that actually be a political system that could work on a national and a global scale? And that's where I think the kind of collaborative, consensus, conversational processes that you're working with could be the key to doing that.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So, and talk a little bit more about how that would look on the ground. How would you see that taking form?
Well, I'm thinking in terms of a town like Port Townsend here, which is, it's not too big, it's kind of its own entity, kind of separated from the ones around. It's kind of an ideal case where it would be, I could see there being, by using the kind of process of dynamic facilitation, there could be people coming together and discovering as a town, we the people of Port Townsend. You know. Right now the concept we the people of Port Townsend really has no meaning. Different people would have different opinions about different things. But imagine if there could actually develop a sense of everybody in town really feeling on board the same program, as it were, of how to solve the various problems you've got, where you want to go as a town, and what your agenda is. You know. If that were to happen, then the whole, that would then become really the governance of the town. I mean, the city council would really then just be an administrative body to carry out what is known to be the will of the people. I mean, democracy is supposed to be about the will of the people, but there isn't really any mechanism in our formal democratic process to ever determine the will of the people. I mean, we elect candidates, and the candidates do things, but the candidates don't go off to Washington or within. There's no will of the people for them to represent, so they just have to sort of use their own common sense or their own agenda, or unfortunately, in most cases, the agendas of some private interests or the other. If there exists a we the people, a will of the people, then one can talk about really having a democracy.
Yes.
If there is no we the people or no sense of the people's will, then what does democracy really mean?
So do you see we the people as being everybody?
Yeah.
And do you see it as being an autonomous function? Or in other words, this group, somebody says, here's what we ask we the people, like a poll? Is it like a poll? Or what? Talk about how does that we the people happen?
One really would need to talk about dynamic facilitation and how it works, and I don't know whether that's something you must have spent time with that on your previous
shows. Oh yeah,
shows.
Don't worry about that. Well,
so people must know something about that.
They might. Might not.
But it's almost like a magic kind of thing where you get a group of people together, and it has to be for a relative, you know, a couple days. It's not just something that happens in 1-2 hour meeting. And what the facilitator does really is just listen, right? Make sure that everybody is heard and what they say gets put up on a flip chart or whatever. And that process somehow, I don't understand clearly why it works, but it does seem to work. That process creates a situation where people who had radically opposing viewpoints and interests find that they are in a space then where they find themselves creating together and working together, and it's like a emotional breakthrough that occurs of community in that meeting, and it seems to be the kind of thing that is infectious. I mean, if you have a cross section of people from this town or any town, from different, you know, rich people, poor people, landowners, whatever, who have this experience of coming together, it's like that's something they can then project to the larger community, because the people in the community can see that, oh, that guy's like me, or that guy's like me, you know, and or that gal, and it's something they can identify with. And I don't know what the size limit is on these particular dynamic facilitation sessions, but to the extent that there could be quite a few people involved in one, then I think it would be possible for a town this size to actually have that happen, that there is a sense of it.
You mean like get everybody in town in the meeting?
I don't know exactly how that would look.
Yeah.
Would it be maybe a certain percentage of them, or maybe different people come at different times?
Right.
Or maybe it's one of these things where anyone can come who wants to and they know they can.
Right.
So maybe they don't go every time, but they feel that they are participating on it, you know, longer-term basis.
Okay. Yeah.
So, and these are germs of ideas, and I'm not somebody with a recipe,
right.
But I'm looking for patterns which might work and could be experimented with.
Right. Well, as you know, the Wisdom Council is one of those patterns, and one that I'm really intrigued with as a way to get the whole town involved in the conversation. And you stopped. We're doing an experiment with it in the Rogue Valley, in Ashland and Medford, and you stopped by and talked to some of the people involved there as part of your quest.
I did. That was the first place I stopped, was there. I was very excited by what they told me about what happened, and I was also very excited by their energy. What they got, they seemed very energized with what they had done. They had organized that Wisdom Council. It went off more successfully than really anybody thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Even yourself, you were with
it. Well, it went off worse and better, and you know, all of it, I guess.
Yeah. But the people came out the people who participated in it, there was really only seven of them, it was kind of a small group, yeah. But they felt so empowered and so alive, and like I think the way people have been reporting it to me is they started out kind of shy and introverted kind of people. After the experience, they were up there in front of a town gathering like they had been public speakers all their life, and they were just so energized and reporting on what had happened to them. And I saw pictures of the people in the audience, and you know, you could see them on the edge of their chairs, and their faces lit up, and they were excited by what was happening. Yeah. And that's what it's really about. It's not about having everybody participate in kind of a duty way, but everybody participating in kind of because it's so exciting when you're really involved in solving your own problems and having the power to solve it. That's an exciting, liberating, empowering feeling. And I think that's how society can be.
Yes.
And
all society. You're not just talking about the port towns and
local
towns and stuff, but the whole everybody.
Yeah, yeah. And there are places in the world, like in Brazil, there's a lot of experimentation going on with things like this. Participatory democracy.
Yes.
Almost as a self-defense against globalization. You're kind of forced into it.
Right. Porto Alegre.
Porto Alegre is one very interesting example. So the feeling that I was getting in Ashland talking to these people, it's almost like the world has come to a point which is so close to the brink of extinction, almost, that it's like almost at a cosmic level there's a force of life wanting to preserve itself that seems to be expressing itself through lots of people coming up with all kinds of initiatives and attempts and efforts to create real democracy.
Yes.
And I think it's exciting to in some way be some small part of that.
Yes.
And it's exciting for me to visit people who feel that same way.
Yes. Well, it's pretty fascinating to me that you live in Ireland pretty much alone, probably. I don't know if you have people that you can talk to about this there in Wexford, Ireland. Do you?
Well, no, it's like when I'm in my little town, as it were, yeah. Just, you know, it's like I have my friends and you know, I go to the pub and I do my things. And I just can't think of political activism there. Right. I don't know why.
And so somehow.
It's so strange. But when I get out other parts of the world, then it's feels different.
Well, and not only getting out, but you're maintaining that interest somehow in this remote yeah. location, what I feel is a remote location. And you're somehow flying to so-called California and for family reasons, and then you're driving, renting a car and driving up to Ashland and talking to the Wisdom Council people there, and then you're going to Eugene and talking to the Dynamic Facilitation Group there, and coming up to Port Townsend and visiting. That kind of energy, you know, to me is, I mean, it's just honorable. I mean, it's like... The world, if that's growing up somewhere in the world in different places, feels like we know that things are going to be okay.
Well, it just felt like it was just so convenient. It was like it was meant to be that I had heard about your work. I had met Tom Attlee before in Eugene and some of the other people there.
Yeah.
And then I had met Rosa because I heard that she'd been working with Dynamic Facilitation. And so if I leave San Francisco, it's like a day's journey, stay overnight, a day's journey, stay overnight, a day's journey, stay overnight. It's like set up just right.
Right.
Just the people I want to see, doing just the things I'm interested in, just the right distance apart, in a beautiful time of the year, in a beautiful part of the world.
Yes.
It's like a gift.
Yeah.
How could I not? How could I not partake?
Yeah, well, some of these characters that you are describing are real activists in the world of democracy also, or at least in the world of dynamic facilitation is Rosa, and then Tom Attlee has written the book Tao of Democracy, and he's, I guess you and he have known each other for quite some time.
Yeah, we've worked together a lot on the internet, and on my email list I publish some of the things he writes, and he sometimes publishes the things I write. There's a lot of cross-pollination.
Right.
And Tom is just a wonderful networking resource. In other words, in his book, The Tao of Democracy, he catalogs and surveys all the different kinds of things people are doing around the world that come into the category of participatory democracy or direct democracy.
Yes.
And he takes kind of an even-handed view. He's not going to say one's better than the other.
Right, which drives me nuts.
Well, all of us who kind of are picking one we want to work with, you know, find it frustrating when somebody else just equates, well, it's like all the others. You know?
Right. Yeah.
But that's all right. That's democracy, too. I mean, yeah. Letting Tom be Tom, letting everybody be who they are, is part of democracy.
Yeah. And today you met Ned Crosby, who lives in Port Townsend also, and he is an innovator in the area of democracy, having invented the citizens' juries about 30 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And so you got a chance to meet Ned. What was your response to Ned?
Well, I mean, I was like, wow, I wasn't even counting on this. I mean, it's like definitely the right thing to be doing right now, this little journey, this little quest. And everybody I talk to, I learn something from.
Right.
And I think I've been getting the feedback that I'm contributing something to their thinking in most cases.
Yes.
So it's kind of I feel like a little bit like a bee going around from flower to flower on this particular journey.
You
know?
Yes.
Well, moving some pollen from this place to this place. And like as I go back down there after having talked to you, I'll be saying different things with the people in Eugene and then different things with the people in
Eugene. Right. Well, I love to hear you talk about the We the People and the forming of the We the People, and you have a sense of the We the People that is very exciting to me that's distant. And of course, I think of a strategy, the Wisdom Council, which you're not really ready to go there yet, but you have you're still toying with other opportunities.
Well, actually, I think the Wisdom Council is a good format. I think that dynamic facilitation can also be used in other ways that aren't quite Wisdom Council. The thing that I'm not on board with is the idea of trying to have a Wisdom Council on a huge scale, like a national one.
Yeah.
I really think that the local base is really very important in a lot of ways. I mean, people who are into environmentalism and all that, they talk about the bioregion and the idea of focusing on the bioregion. And I think that same thing is true politically. I honestly think that the democratic process has to be a small-scale process. And then the way it can extend to bigger scales is really, it has to exist first on the small scale. If it exists, if there is a We the People in every community, then I think it will be relatively easy for those communities to collaborate with one. Because they'll already be used to using collaboration and consensus and working together creatively at the local level. It'll be very natural for then such communities to work together
mm-hmm.
on a regional level, and then regions to work together on what we would call a state level.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would be how people were thinking then.
Mm-hmm.
Now, under our top-down hierarchical system, we're thinking in terms of being competitive, and it's an adversary. Everything's adversarial.
Mm-hmm.
Everything we do, we think of as from an adversarial point. The two sides, which side is going to win. And if instead you're thinking of people, hey, how can we work together to solve our problems? There's no losers, what shall we do,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
If the town's better, it's better for all of us. Right. Nobody loses. And when that becomes the paradigm, which is really what the paradigm of democracy is, then I think the bigger scales will happen by themselves. But if you try to start with a big scale, it's like you're starting in the wrong system. That's what I mean by the system building from the bottom, so that the old system can just disappear like the skin of a snake,
mm-hmm.
and then there's the new system.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to start a national Wisdom Council. That's what we're working
on.
Some of us are excited about
it. I'm glad to be wrong.
So we're thinking, I wasn't going to be wrong or right, but some of us have come to a different conclusion and proceeding. But and the beginning of that starts at the end of May in Springfield, Illinois, with this gathering of, well, I guess you heard about that from Joseph.
Oh, that's going to be a conference of lots of different, America Speaks or whatever it is.
America Speaks and the ACLU and the National Conservative Union and the League of Women Voters and lots of different organizations that are from the left and from the right, and some of them are involved in creating dialogue and some of them are involved in building more deliberative democracy processes.
Right.
And So some of them are process oriented and some of them are just networks of people. Uh-huh. And the idea is to then gather them and visit for 3 days mm-hmm. and all these representatives. I don't know what process they'll use for that. I'd love yeah. to be a part of it. And come up, I hope, my goal would be that they would bless a National Day of Dialogue
yeah.
in September
uh-huh.
before the elections.
Uh-huh.
And 3 days prior to that, to bless a National Wisdom Council process, uh-huh. which would essentially evolve the topics for the dialogue. So,
right.
so the, there would be a sampling of people and they would talk and say, now here's what we think, and then mm-hmm. and then have go into a day of dialogue involving as many people as possible.
Yeah, that's very exciting.
And then the hope is, of course, that this would be just the first of many.
Unfortunately, there's a possible, what may happen, see what we got then, is a lot of people coming to this, each of whom
yes.
have their
yeah.
system they work on. Yeah. You've got, you know, the yeah. National Wisdom Council, and yeah. America Speaks for them. They probably each, they may each be coming with the, well, I want everybody to buy into mine.
Right.
You know, it's possible. So.
No, it's possible. But the, see, the way I see it is that these groups gather often
mm-hmm.
and talk past one another.
Yeah.
I mean, every few years somebody thinks it's a great idea and they talk past one another and they go away and nothing much really happens.
Mm-hmm.
To me, what's new is that the Wisdom Council offers, for the first time ever, it's a new social invention. It offers a way that the topics for these other processes could be delivered to them by we the people.
Yeah.
Or a symbolic representation.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the other processes that I'm aware of require somebody in authority to say, here's the topic we want you to look at.
Yeah.
And the Wisdom Council doesn't have that. So
yeah.
the Wisdom Council really stands apart from all the other processes.
Yeah.
And so my hope is that each one of them will say, oh my goodness, here's the first opportunity ever to get
yeah.
an authority process that isn't tainted in
yeah.
some way.
Yeah.
And now my process, which might be conversation cafes or nationalism forums or America Speaks or something, is no longer tainted by somebody in a nonprofit in the background pulling the strings.
That's true, that's true. Now, on the other hand, one could look at this a whole different way, and that is that you have a lot of people whose energy is behind inventing or creating real democracy. And they all have different ideas about how it should be done. And they're all coming together. What does that make you think of? They need to be dynamic, facilitated, don't they?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, it does.
And including you. You can't be the facilitator. You're
especially
one of the
me. I'm one of the worst.
So what you need is somebody who's a dynamic facilitator.
It's true.
To help all of you guys talk to each other.
No, it's really true. It's really true. It's a great point. It's a great opportunity.
And I wish that, but the thing is that from their point of view, it's like, oh, wait, well, why should we buy into dynamic facilitation?
Right.
I mean, it would be hard for them to see that as neutral.
Yes.
But I honestly think it is neutral.
Yeah.
I think you know it is.
Yeah.
You know it is. And I think that would be a more exciting conference if it were done that way.
I do too. It's the way to do the conference. It really
yeah.
is. I don't.
Are we?
Yeah. Well,
kind of.
It's just about time. So we've had a. We're really pleased that you could come. I'm really pleased that you could come, Richard, and,
yeah.
and be here today. And we had this makeshift studio. Of course, it was bad news when I heard that the studio was crashed. And you had made this long trip.
Yeah.
And so we got a. I want to thank Cliff Wood to come over as be the camera person. We only have one camera
yeah.
this time.
Yeah.
But we've got lighting and plants
yeah.
and the whole thing, so
yes.
I really appreciate your coming.
I want to see the tape.
Yeah.